The Pickersgill Detentions by Andrew McGibbon, starring Ian Richardson. Episode 4, The Black-Eyed Marketeer.
My name is Dr. Henry Pickersgill. Not so long ago, I retired as senior English master at Haunchurst College, once a distinguished public school for young gentlemen, which has slowly over the years blossomed into a multi-faith state-run comprehensive for boys and girls of any background. I greatly enjoyed my time there. I reveled in teaching English literature, and believe I was good at spotting a talented writer, being a writer myself, though in spite of the fact that I taught two of the greatest novelists of this century, neither of them ever came back to thank me. The ungrateful bastards. But it is the memory of certain detentions that I gave which stay with me the most, and I recall one detention very clearly indeed. It took place on a beautiful autumn evening in 1941. The college was bathed in the kind of luminescence that only English Octobers produce, like candlelight sparkling through stained glass, a pellucid burnt gold. As the sun set behind the chapel steeple, the shadow of a group of boys crept up the window, obscuring the light. In you come, boys. Sit down. Before we start, Calman.
Sir?
I haven't set any writing yet, so what are you doing?
Just warming up my fountain pen, sir.
Pass what you've written up here. What on earth is this? A drawing of what looks like a human head, the mast of a ship, I think, followed by the letters E, R, Is, and A, followed by a picture of a cockerel. Would you care to explain this, Calman?
Well, sir, I was only...
Calman's unique semi-pictorial idiom, a kind of childlike rebus, was charming and had a satisfying, if somewhat crude, literary merit.
It's only a bit of fun, sir.
I see. The headmaster is a cockerel. Who sent you to detention this evening?
Major Edwin Parmenter, sir.
And what reason has he to send four of you? What on earth did you do to upset the Major?
We're not sure, sir, but Calman knows, sir.
Well, Calman, what did you say to the airman?
Oh, well, the Major was angry because his order didn't quite... He was expecting something and didn't quite get what he'd asked for, sir.
What, homework? A house paper of some kind? He's not still trying to get his students to make those pointless relief maps of Belgium by stretching porridge-soaked sheets over chicken wire, is he?
No, sir. It was cheese.
What?
And some fresh kidneys.
Cheese and kidneys? He's a geography teacher, not a high-standard provisions merchant, Calman.
Sir?
Ah, Calman. This wouldn't have anything to do with your father, would it?
Yes, sir. He's been very good to me.
Calman's father was very well connected at the Ministry of Food. In fact, he was the Under-Minister of Food, and in addition to his considerable duties managing the country's diminished wartime food supplies, he naturally saw to it that his son should set an example. In this case, it was an example of squander and gluttony. There was nothing the boy could want for, and what he didn't want was sold on to those who did and who were prepared to pay for it. Unbeknownst to his father, Calman had become an upper-class spiv, by appointment to the school's weaker, or perhaps hungrier, masters. Occasionally, however, a black marketeer must expect a black eye. Calman's organization was not up to much, and Major Edwin Parmenter, decorated veteran of the Royal Flying Corps, had paid 10 shillings for cheese and fresh kidneys. When they failed to appear, the Major sent Calman to detention, a puzzling sanction, but then his options were limited.
I offered him butter, a nice bit of topside, and bacon rashers as compensation. They were fresh in, but he was furious about the kidneys, sir.
Have you any idea just how repellent and unconscionable your actions are, Calman? There are deserving people going hungry because of your activities.
Not me, sir. It's Daddy's fault, anyway. He's showering me the best to keep in with Mater. You see, she's threatened to divorce him on account of something he did which Mummy won't tell me.
I later found out Calman's father had been having an affair with Lady Ampleforth's daughter, the Honourable Gay Chester Bowes, to give her the family name. She sought out the company of rich men, whose inherited wealth was diminished only by the effects of their inherited syphilis. Now there was a war on, and an adulterous romance with the minister in charge of national provisions was perhaps an expedient move. Anyway, his plain wife had found out, and this was reparations of sorts. Their son, Augustus Calman, would not go hungry, and neither, it seems, would some of the masters. Though where they got the money to pay for such goods, I can only guess.
Oh, dear, Calman, what did you do or not do? And why have Moorcroft, Hindle, Rand, and Smedley joined you?
We had the Major's order for breakfast, sir. We were famished.
I see. Well, yes, breakfast hasn't been very thrilling for a while. I find it hard to keep Mrs. Bumstead's powdered egg scramble down. Anyway, did you return the Major's money, Calman?
No, sir. Steel Groins found out and threatened to beat us all to a pulp if we didn't give it to him.
So you were at the Major's order and were robbed of his money?
Yes, sir.
I wouldn't have sent you to detention.
Thank you, sir.
I'd have had you executed as traitors for undermining the war effort.
Sir?
Have you still got the beef, butter and bacon?
Yes, sir. It's in my gas mask case here.
And where do you keep your gas mask, then?
It's in my desk, sir.
Very well. In the light of these exceptional circumstances, I think we can waive the usual penalty for such gross dereliction of wartime responsibility.
Thank you very much, sir.
And where do you think you're going?
You just let us off, sir.
No, I didn't. You will all sit down. And, Calman, you will hand me over what remains of your ill-gotten provisions.
I can't do that, sir. I've promised them to Lefty now, sir. He's paid good money for them.
Give me your gas mask case at the end of detention. I shall endeavour to hand them over to Mr. Rogers when I see him, along with the money he paid you. Now, you will take out your copybooks and start writing the following sentence. I will not sell or purloin controlled groceries, dairy or meat products appropriated from the national supply for the express purpose of selling them on to a third party.
Lefty, or Lieutenant S.R.S. Rogers M.A. Oxon, was master of Wordsworth House. Another hero of the Great War, Lefty had put his own life at risk by drawing enemy shellfire away from his King's Derbyshire Regiment colleagues trapped in a shallow trench behind enemy lines at the Somme. He took a shrapnel burst very badly in the leg, which left him leaning slightly to the left. His left, that is. I thought the boys, who can be very cruel when it comes to this sort of thing, showed great respect to the fellow, that they called him Lefty. If they'd called him Righty, that would, I think, have shown a distinct lack of objectivity for his condition.
Or incarceration. 100 times, gentlemen, please.
Oh, sir.
Well, it's either that or a visit to the headmaster followed by certain expulsion. Which would you prefer?
They began scratching the pages with their nibs. They had barely made it to the second write-through when...
We should go down the shelter, sir.
All right, gentlemen, don't be alarmed. You know the drill well enough by now. Grab your mask. That means you too, Calman. Let us make our way to the school shelter where...
Help!
Help!
At once the building disappeared and the cold darkness enveloped us completely. A rogue bomber had got through and one of its deadly cargo of explosives had ripped our classroom in half, blocking the way to the quad and the school shelter. Half of my classroom was now exposed to the night sky.
Boys, listen to me. I don't think we can make it to the shelter, so get under my desk.
My first duty was to the boys, and though I was shaking to death, managed to drag my desk away from any remaining walls and proceeded to stack desks against and on top of the table, building up a wooden cave that might protect us. It was chaos. All 7 levels of hell compacted into a deadly shower of destruction. And if that wasn't enough, a cold shudder shot through me.
Where's Calman? Calman!
He didn't reply. I could now hear my heart pounding above the havoc.
Calman! Calman! Answer me, for heaven's sake!
Again, there was nothing. I started to consider the horror of being responsible for losing a child. Then, out of the flashes, I heard a pained voice.
Sir, I'm over here. I can't move my legs.
The little spiv bastard was alive. The relief was overwhelming. Though it was pitch black, the light from flashes and distant flames illuminated what was left of the room, and I could see Calman trapped under masonry. Thankfully, it had stopped shy of crushing him. I finished fortifying my desk, told the other boys to stay well underneath, and went to help Calman.
Calman?
Yes, sir?
I think you should try and join us under the desks on the other side of the room. I have a feeling it's rather safer there.
Righto, sir. I think it's just a few bricks. Nothing serious.
No, no. I'll help you up. Come on. This way.
I pulled him free from the light coating of brick, dust and wood, supported him as he hobbled across the room over the fallen masonry and crawled under the desk. We shouted nervously as the battle raged about us. At one point, a shell hit the pond, showering us in carp. Then suddenly, Kalman barked.
Sir, I have to go back.
Nonsense, you're not going anywhere till this raid's over.
I've left my gas mask over there.
And with that, he shot out from under the table and threw himself across the room.
Kalman, come back here at once, you idiotic boy.
I ran out after him and dragged him back to the table.
Sir, please, you've got to get my gas mask case. Please, I've things in there, sir, from my mother.
Oh, for heaven's sake, Kalman, this is not the time
please,
or the...
Please, sir.
The look on the boy's face compelled me against all my instincts to venture out again into the dust and darkness. I clawed under the masonry and had just retrieved his bag when...
There you are, sir. Nice cup of tea.
Thank you very much.
Oh, no, sir. Don't take it so big. You did everything you could. Get back behind the line!
I had emerged from the wreckage of my tutorial room unscathed. Unfortunately, the four boys had taken a direct hit on their makeshift shelter while I was out retrieving Kalman's gas mask box. They wouldn't have felt a thing. The headmaster was very good to me in the days that followed, and together we made a good effort, I think, in helping the grieving parents, in spite of Smedley's father insisting I should be dead, not his precious son, something he later apologized for. Alone in my study a few nights later, I emptied the contents of Kalman's gas mask box onto my table. Out fell a pendant with his mother's picture on, and a piece of paper. On it was written the most beautiful hieroglyphic interpretation of the line exercise I had set moments before the fateful events unfolded. I'll describe the first part to you. I will not, picture of a hand holding banknotes, or purloin, spelt wrong, controlled, picture of a loaf of bread, picture of a cow being milked, picture of a beef steak with an apostrophe next to it, appropriated from the national supply for the picture of a steam engine puffing furiously pulling coaches, purpose of selling them on to a picture of a third-class train door party, etc. I think you get the idea. I lifted up the box again, and this time out fell a large packet covered in greaseproof paper, which had been stuck to the bottom. Inside was a large steak, a block of butter, some bacon rashers, and a pre-1939 gold sovereign. It seemed unbelievable to imagine that the boy was prepared to sacrifice my life to retrieve these items. Still, I felt it was important to return the produce and the money to whomsoever they belonged. What with one thing and another, though, I just never got round to it.
In The Black-Eyed Marketeer, Dr. Pickersgill was played by Ian Richardson, Kalman by Martin Hyder, Moorcroft by Phil Cornwell, Hindle Rand by Dominic Hawksley, Smedley by Nick Romero, and the ARP Warden by David Quantick. Studio production was by Jonathan Ruffle. The Pickersgill Detentions was written and directed by Andrew McGibbon and is a Curtains for Radio production for Radio 4.